curious, do you think the Republican Party is about abortion? A sinking feeling. I have not yet formed a complete opinion. I don't know if I ever will, but I got a sinking feeling. And we heard earlier this week some audio from former governor and Senator George Allen from Virginia. And he was unwilling on Tim Russert's Meet the Press to just come out and say, I want to see Roe overturned. The best he could do was, well, if that's what happens, so be it. And then there's this Newsweek piece, the GOP's abortion anxiety, talking about exactly the same thing. People being very quiet, even the GOP leadership and the frontrunners for 2008 being very quiet on the issue of abortion. We're going to be talking about that with Martha Brand, the Republican Party and abortion, here in the first hour of Issues, Etc. And after that interview, I want your reaction to it. How serious do you think the Republican Party is about abortion? And do you think if there is a real pro-life movement in the Democratic Party, if the Republicans continue to be kind of quiet on this thing, you think the Democratic Party has a chance of taking the issue away? It's open lines for the first hour, and we'll be hearing this interview with Martha Brandt that we recorded just a little bit earlier this afternoon. We've also got some other things on the front of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Interesting front page story. 99-foot cross stirs unease in Tony Town. Town and country planners twice rejected church's proposal. Now it's before the Board of Aldermen. They want to put up a 99-foot cross. That's just under 100 feet for those of you who are counting. It's not going to be the tallest cross around. They're in Illinois, according to the headline here. In Bald Knob, at Alto Pass, there's a 111-foot cross. There's that big one that you always drive by in Effingham, Illinois. Huge white cross. Well, they want one out in Town and Country. I want to know what you think about it, and then we'll also be hearing a little update on the Da Vinci Code trial, and Pat Robertson, of course, is in the news again. He said some things about Islam. We'll play some of that for you and get your reaction. The first hour of Open Lines, Issues, Etc. In the second hour of the program, we're going to be spending it with Pastor Bob Rosso. He's assistant professor of theology at Concordia University in Irvine, California. We're going to talk about baptism. In the third hour of the program, as promised yesterday, we need to pick up where we left off with John Hagee, his Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, and his sermon in a sermon series on covenants, on the marriage covenant. He was right in the middle of kind of lambasting the men in his congregation for speaking more sweetly to their cars than to their wives, and I'm sure he's going to go on to talk about his wife. We'll do a sermon review and finish off that long sermon review in the third hour of Issues, Etc. Our call-in number is 505-7850. Or 1-800-730-2727. Well, that South Dakota law passed, at least all the way to the governor's house, and it's going to meet with some court challenge that would ban all abortion. Now, what would one expect in the Republican Party, a pro-life party, by and large, by way of reaction? Not the reaction you would expect. Earlier today, we talked with Martha Brandt, Washington correspondent for Newsweek magazine, a contributor to a story in Newsweek titled "The GOP's Abortion Anxiety." I started out by asking her, what was the reaction, the immediate reaction of the leadership of the GOP to the South Dakota law?
You know, you'd think they'd all be very excited about it, but this is a law that really pushes to the extremes. It only makes an exception for the life of a mother. It doesn't include the usual rape and incest. And not only are some Republican candidates and others kind of steering clear and not wanting to comment on it, but even those in the National Right to Life movement weren't real keen on the South Dakota legislators pushing this particular bill to the fore.
Now, are there concerns with the extremity of the law or with its prospects, as it will inevitably, if the governor decides to push it up there, its prospects before the Supreme Court?
Well, the prospects look pretty bleak, at least the way things are configured right now. Justice Stevens doesn't look to be going anywhere, and he's probably the, you know, five out of the four that'll keep Roe intact and probably turn this thing down. So it could actually backfire. And what's also happening is it's galvanizing the anti-abortion or pro-choice side, or rather the pro-abortion rights or pro-choice side. And they're, you know, getting new money, they're getting new constituents, they're really kind of building up steam because they've been saying, you think we've been crying chicken, you know, little, you know, sky is falling for too long with all these reasonable bills that the right's been trying to pass, but lo and behold, this is their true colors, they really want to ban Roe. So it's actually having the effect of galvanizing the left.
There was a big meeting of many of the prospective candidates for the 2008 presidential run on the Republican side down south in Memphis, Southern Republican Leadership Council, I think it was called. What happened there, and did the subject of the South Dakota law and abortion in general come up?
Well, it came up, and my colleague Howard Fineman asked RNC Director Ken Melman, to talk about it. He basically just flat out refused, which is unusual because usually Republicans will jump on this issue. They've gotten a lot of traction from the abortion issue, but some of the likely candidates like John McCain seem to be steering away from it and, basically deflecting, saying, I don't know about the technicalities of it. I can't really comment. So, that is them distancing themselves from a law you'd think that they would be very excited about.
On the subject of Justice Stevenson, he's 85. If a Republican wins in 2008, it's fairly likely, not inevitable, but it's fairly likely that they'll be replacing Stevens on the court with the nomination. Does that seem to be in the minds of any of the prospective presidential candidates?
Possibly, but talking again about Roe v. Wade, I think there's been a lot of tea leaf reading going on here in Washington about Justice Roberts and now Justice Alito and what they would do. But in both of their hearings, both of which I attended, the issue of stare decisis or letting decisions stand and having precedent rule was really front and center. So there's just no guarantee that the court will eventually rule against Roe v. Wade and strike it down. That being said, there are many, many states right now where it might as well be 1972. And in places like Mississippi and South Dakota itself, there is only one place in the entire state where a woman can get an abortion. So in some places, it doesn't really matter. It's almost a moot point since most of the activity has been on a state-by-state level.
I've been interested lately in Mitt Romney, who has been kind of sitting the fence on this issue, although lately he's been coming out and saying, I am pro-life. Any word from him?
Well, it's true. He's definitely a fence straddler, but he has said that he would sign a law if something like that came before him. Now, of course, he's in Massachusetts. It never will, but he got jumped all over by the Boston press, and he's an interesting case. Another thing that we've seen him do, and you see this a lot, you see this with Governor of Missouri, Mr. Blunt, on the issue of contraception, which is one of these parallel issues, RU 486, which is basically a medical abortion, and something called the Morning After Bill, which is basically a high doses of a birth control pill, so it's not something that causes an abortion. They mix them, and I don't know if it's intentional or not, but they try to kind of confuse the issue, and so they're all over the map on these things and don't seem to be getting their stories quite straight.
We played a bit from Tim Russert's Meet the Press, where Senator and former Governor George Allen in Virginia was being asked about the South Dakota law. And it was odd because Russert asked three times in a row, doesn't the South Dakota law, if it passes court muster, mean the overturning of Roe v. Wade? Would you support that? Do you want to see Roe overturned? The most that Russert could get out of him in three times taking a stab at that question was, well, if that's going to happen, so be it. What does that tell you?
Well, my colleague Howard, again, Fineman, spoke to him, and what he told Howard was that if a bill like the South Dakota bill came in front of him, and now this guy is very staunchly pro-life, he would veto it. And part of it is because, up until now, the pro-life movement's been pretty reasonable. In late years, they've been talking about things like parental notification and things that seem pretty reasonable to most average Americans, two-thirds of whom agree with some kind of restriction on abortion. But the South Dakota bill is not reasonable in most Americans' mind because it is so restrictive. It doesn't even include incest or rape. So I think a lot of, as we said at the beginning, politicians just think that this is the wrong bill to be pushed this far along.
What about on the Democratic side? There's been a lot in the news lately about, in fact, I just heard a piece yesterday from National Public Radio where within, not necessarily the Democratic side, but the abortion rights side, they're debating how to approach abortion, especially as the next election cycle approaches.
Well, it's already changing. You have Bob Casey running against Santorum, who is staunchly, staunchly pro-life, as is Casey. Casey, the Democrat, also pro-life, being supported by the DNC and even folks like Chuck Schumer, who are obviously among the most liberal of the Democrats here in Washington. And that, to me, is a really telling sign, especially since Casey's own father, who was also pro-life, was banned from talking at the 1992 Democratic Convention. So this is a sea change for Democrats. And the group Democrats for Life is finally getting some traction. I talked to the head of that last week, and she said when she started in 2002, she couldn't get her phone calls returned, and now they have 41 state chapters. So there's some indication of movement within the party, the Democratic Party itself.
We're talking with Martha Brent. She's Washington correspondent for Newsweek magazine. She's a contributor to the story in the latest issue of Newsweek titled The GOP's Abortion Anxiety. Back on the subject of Kristen Day of Democrats for Life, she's a regular guest on the program, and she's very optimistic from her perspective about the prospects of perhaps seeing that glass ceiling on the abortion issue being shattered in the Democratic Party, where if you want to rise into leadership levels, you will flip-flop on the issue and become pro-choice. She's very optimistic that there may actually be a leadership-level Democrats in the future who are pro-life. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know how overtly pro-life they'll be in the immediate future. I mean, she is certainly optimistic for 08 and the convention, and we are seeing, you know, in her mind, progress with folks like Casey and others. But it's even more subtle than that. You have some folks who are pro-choice now, say Hillary Clinton, who's talking about abortion in a whole new way, talking about it as a quote-unquote tragic choice. Barack Obama, recently one of the rising stars of the Democratic Party, we mentioned in this week's article, talking about abortion in the context of parents and parenting, which is a whole new framework and language for the Democrats. And it's finally, you finally see the Democrats taking on some of the moral conundrums involved in abortion. They're no longer just saying, hey, it's a right, plain and simple, and women's choice, et cetera, et cetera. They're talking about it in a much more nuanced and moral way.
Did we hear hints of that even a decade ago when then-President Bill Clinton was often quoted talking about abortion as something he wanted to see safe, legal, and rare?
Absolutely. But now I would think the emphasis is much more on the rare. There is actually a bill that's just gaining some momentum and hasn't even been dropped yet. It's called the 95-10 bill. It's basically trying to reduce abortions by 95% over the next 10 years. Former Congressman Tim Romer, for example, Congressman Tim Ryan, others are involved in this. And their point, and this is where they think they can get some traction against the Republicans, is that the Republicans have benefited from the abortion issue. But when it comes right down to it, they haven't done anything to reduce abortions in this country. And 1.3 million women a year is way up there among Western countries. And so his point, Romer and others I spoke with last week, is, look, let's seize back the moral high ground and point out that President Bush and the Republican-controlled Congress have done really, frankly, diddly when it comes to reducing the actual numbers of abortion. Let's talk about that as Democrats.
Well, I think it's significant as well that I think it was during the Clinton years that the number of abortions began to fall. And in the previous administrations, Republican, they showed no sign of letting up. They kept on rising. And then, I guess, ironically, during the Clinton administration, they start to fall.
Right, right. I mean, and I'm not quite sure what explains that. I mean, certainly, you know, Senator Clinton also is, you know, somewhat parroting her husband's, you know, safe, legal, and rare. But as I say, I think she and others are starting to emphasize rare, and they're talking about it in terms of being rare and regulated. Again, understanding that a lot of Americans these days, especially because of technological advances, when you can see at 6 weeks that there is such a thing as a fetal heartbeat, whether you want to call it cardiac activity or call it a baby's heartbeat, that's people's choice. But technologically, people realize a lot more than they used to about what's going on inside the womb, and that has changed people's opinion, and you can see that reflected in public opinion polls.
Has there been any reaction from pro-choice groups to the to the Republicans' relative silence, recent silence, on the abortion issue since the South Dakota law?
Well, like I say, I mean, I think that they really see this as a battle cry. And I was talking to the head of the Planned Parenthood affiliate in South Dakota, actually. They're based in Minneapolis. And she said she's just, ever since late February when this became apparent, she hasn't been off the phone. I mean, they've got donors making big contributions. She's had people making small contributions. She said she had a group of women in Brooklyn who called her to say that they were holding a fundraiser for the women of South Dakota. And, you know, it doesn't amount to much in terms of dollars. But during the Roberts hearings and during the Alito hearings, a lot of people who worked at places like Planned Parenthood and NARAL, Pro-Choice America, were truly frustrated because Americans were not agitated. They didn't think that their rights were going to be threatened. And now they do. And so now they see slowly a galvanizing that they think is really going to put wind in their, basically, their flagging sails.
How do you expect the issue to play out here in 2008?
Well, you know, it seems like both sides are trying to avoid it. You have Rahm Emanuel, who's, you know, heading up the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, saying that it's not going to be front and center because it's been such a bad issue for them. But frankly, it's an issue that they can't avoid. And I think until the Democrats and the Republicans, but especially Democrats, because they have really lost so much ground on this issue, tackles the issue of how to talk about abortion in a new way, be more honest and open about it. I mean, you had a meeting here in Washington 2 weeks ago of pro-choice activists and groups, so the national leadership as well as grassroots, and really tackling the issue of how do we talk about abortion in a new moral framework? And the basic premise being that if we don't take back the moral high ground, if we continue to cede it, we're going to keep losing. And they do recognize that they've lost. Now the Democratic Party has to do the same thing, but they're scared.
Martha Brand is a contributor to a story in the latest issue of Newsweek titled The GOP's Abortion Anxiety. You can read it online at Newsweek.com. Newsweek.com. Martha Brand is also Washington correspondent for Newsweek magazine. Martha, thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure, Todd.
All right, there's the interview with Martha Brand. I want your reaction to some of the issues that were raised both in the Newsweek story but also in our conversation with her. How serious do you think the Republican Party is about abortion? When a big opportunity like the South Dakota law that bans all abortion in that state comes along, everyone gets real quiet all of a sudden. And even the leadership, and we're not just talking about prominent leaders, we're talking about Ken Mellman, who's the chairman of the Republican National Committee. He won't even talk about it. He refuses to even discuss it with the press. So do you think the GOP is serious about abortion? Do you think they're afraid that it might go away as an issue? And do you think if they remain silent on it, or at least relatively silent on it, that the Democratic Party might, at some time in the future, have the possibility of taking the issue away or making them share the issue? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. Got a bunch of other things to share with you as well in the course of this first hour of open lines, a little bit of audio open lines. One of the things that came to mind while I'm waiting for your thoughts and your reaction to the GOP and abortion, I mean, when Newsweek is noticing that GOP leaders go quiet, then something's happening. Now, I'm not talking about any kind of concerted effort here. What I'm talking about is when you finally get what you want or what you think you want, you don't know what to do with it. Do you think that's the explanation of why the leadership, and especially those who are hoping to run for president in 2008, are just being quiet about the South Dakota law? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. While we wait for your thoughts on that, here's a story from the very front page of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that I found interesting. You know, whenever they talk about public displays of the cross, it catches my attention. You could talk about public displays of the Ten Commandments all day long. Those are a dime a dozen. How often do you see a story on a public display of a cross, and not just any cross? It's not just someone's cross sitting on their lawn. It's a 99-foot cross. At least they hope it will be a 99-foot cross. In Town and Country, the headline from the front of the paper, if you saw it, 99-foot cross stirs unease in Tonytown. Town and Country planners twice rejected church's proposal. Now it's before the Board of Aldermen. Have you heard about this? Do you think that if the Board of Aldermen in Town and Country says, no 99-foot cross for you, actually it's a congregation there that would like to put this up. Where is that? It's the West County Assembly of God. They want a big cross just like they have out there in Effingham. Not as big as the one in Effingham. I mean, that thing is almost 200 feet tall. Or the one in Groom, Texas. That's just smaller than the Effingham cross. Maybe a little closer to home, Alto Pass, Illinois. Bald Knob Christian Foundation has a cross that's 111 feet tall. This one in Town and Country would be 99 feet tall. Is this a case of religious discrimination if the aldermen in Town and Country say, no, 99-foot cross? Would you consider it Christian persecution? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's a bit of the story. Members of the West County Assembly of God say that they want the cross to help their religious mission to spread the message of Jesus. City residents say it would be a dangerous distraction and just plain ugly. Now, I don't know. The cross that they're showing in the little sketch here actually is rather attractive. There's a resident there who lives about a half mile from the church. He says that the proposed cross doesn't bother him too much, but he summed up the feelings of the 100 people who attended a public hearing on Monday, saying it's just an obnoxious endeavor, putting up a 99-foot cross in Town and Country. So if you were a member of this church, how important would it be to you to have a 99-foot cross in Town and Country? Think about it. Give me a call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. One other resident said, look, it's just not congruent with the values of this city. Now, I don't know what that means. Maybe it just means their values would prohibit unusually large religious displays. I don't think that he necessarily means the cross is out of line with their values. In a letter to the city, the pastor of the church, that's the Reverend John Wilson, said that he believed that the church's location on Outer Road 40, quote, is a gift of God to be used to give the Christian message to people in the 164,655 vehicles passing the church every day. He wants to use his location, and in order to draw attention to that location, he wants a big, big cross. And he says, look, there are no height restrictions on flagpoles in Town and Country. You can make them as tall as you want them to be. Quote, in reality, the cross differs little as a structure from a tall flagpole, and like a flagpole, the cross carries a symbol for the community at large to see, a reminder of Christ. He called the efforts to keep the cross from being built an effort to erect obstacles to the exercise of our rights of religious freedom. So the pastor there believes that his religious freedom is being infringed upon. Do you? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Two issues on the table for your reaction during this first hour of Open Lines. The Republican Party is going silent on the issue of abortion lately, especially when they get together down at that Southern Republican Leaders Conference. They didn't talk about the South Dakota law. That's odd. These are all presidential candidates, or at least prospective presidential candidates. And when asked if he was going to bring up the issue of abortion at all, the leader of the Republican Party, Ken Mellman, said no, not going to bring it up. The Democrats have been criticized for being silent because the issue doesn't seem like a winner to them. So would you level the same criticism at the Republican Party when they're winning, at least in South Dakota, on the issue? How committed, really, do you think the GOP is to the abortion issue? When we come back, I want to hear from you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you're like me, you could spend hours just browsing in a bookstore. Well, every month we tell our Issues, Etc. listeners about a special book. We call it the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month. And you can find each and every one of our Issues, Etc. Books of the Month at Concordia Publishing House's bookstores. They're here in St. Louis. One's at 3558 South Jefferson in the city, the other on the campus of Concordia Seminary here in Clayton. Follow the signs to the CPH bookstore and ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March. It's called He Is Risen Indeed. It's a children's book telling the simple story of Christ's death and resurrection. Just visit the CPH bookstores, 3558 South Jefferson, or here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. The book of the month for March, He Is Risen Indeed. 3558 South Jefferson, or on the campus of Concordia Seminary.
Hear why it's so important to help someone grow in their walk with Christ. This Global Minute asks you to pray for missionaries who develop Christian leaders. Imagine a part of the world where there are no known Christians or active churches. God uses a missionary to bring a person to Christ, but they can become confused, not knowing how to express their love for Christ in their own culture. An article in the magazine Mission Frontiers describes how new Christians in unreached people groups may adopt the worship style of the missionary they met. The neighbors and family members may think the new Christians look and act strange, but breakthroughs also happen when the gospel message spreads in a way everyone in the culture can understand it. Pray for missionaries to effectively communicate the gospel message and seek God's guidance as they develop local Christian leaders. Prayer will let you impact your world for Christ's glory. Learn how you can pray around the globe with a visit to the website missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Jesus said, "A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Thank you, Lord, for that reminder, especially apt after last weekend. Somehow I suspect I wasn't the only one who spent last weekend working on income taxes. For me, the task was worse, because I had fallen behind, way, way behind, keeping up with my financial records. Over the last months, piles proliferated around the desk at home. The Quakers sing, "'Tis a gift to be simple, and I believe it," but the weekend showed how poor my performance has been. The day of rest, commanded to Old Testament people, says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But what if all your work isn't done? No matter, was the Old Testament judgment. Stop work anyway. It's a great paradox, but true. Stop some work and put devotion and prayer into your daily life, and you will accomplish more. About those who put God first in their schedule, Psalm 92 says, the righteous will flourish. You are worried and upset about many things, says Jesus, but only one thing is needed. And Jesus also says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. After working on the taxes, I don't think I will be guilty of that. Thanks for listening. I'm Dale Meyer.
The spirit of a soldier, the guts of a gladiator, and the attitude of an athlete. Those are the elements of Christians fighting the good fight. On the next Focus on the Family, that attitude is expressed by Reverend Herb Lusk, a former NFL player who now pastors a church in urban Philadelphia. A stirring message for all of us on the next Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
They'd all be very excited about it, but this is a law that really pushes to the extremes. It only makes an exception for the life of a mother. It doesn't include the usual rape and incest. And not only are some Republican candidates and others kind of steering clear and not wanting to comment on it, but even those in the National Right to Life movement weren't real keen on the South Dakota legislators pushing this particular bill to the fore.
All right, that's Martha Brandt from an interview earlier today talking about how, well, under the headline in the Newsweek article she contributed to, it says the GOP's abortion anxiety, the pro-life movement is on a roll, so why are the Republican Party's top guns suddenly so shy on the subject? That's a question for you here during Audio Open Lines, Issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The other issue I've laid on the table has to do with the front page story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the 99-foot cross that's having a hard time standing up. Well, actually, they haven't even built it yet, but having a hard time being built in town and country. Town planners say no twice, and then it goes to the aldermen. The aldermen are considering whether or not they're going to let this West County Assemblies of God put up their 99-foot cross. They've got a great location. They want to take advantage of it. They want to put up a cross. How is that different from flagpole? Okay, so is this a private property issue? Is it an issue of religious freedom in your mind? If they were not allowed to put it up, is that Christian persecution? If you were a member of this church, how important would it be to you to have this 99-foot cross in town and country? And if so, why? Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, and our call-in numbers for this open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live this Wednesday. It's the 15th of March. The Ides of March is what they call this for historical reasons. Let's start with Linda, who calls from Farmington. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Pastor.
Hi, Linda.
Well, I want to set up the framework for something that I'm going to say. As far as this 99-foot cross, I would have once said, oh, that would be wonderful, you know. But then recently I had read an article, it was very eye-opening, regarding William Tyndale back in the the 16th century, before there was an English translation of God's Word. And, you know, they were forbidden to read God's Word except in the Latin tongue. But they did have a cross in the village. And when he first heard, he was 16 years old, when he first heard what that cross was all about, and it frustrated him because the villagers would kneel down in front of this cross, you know, and he realized it was plain idolatry against the commandment of God because they didn't know what that cross was. They were just idolizing this cross. So how helpful is it if you're trying to use this as a mission tool, you know, to reach out into the community, if these people cannot hear the preaching? The preaching is the most important thing. If they want to spend their time and their money on something, then, you know, people are going to have to hear what that cross is about. Mm-hmm.
You're right, Linda. Thank you very much. I mean, that's where my thoughts ran when I first heard the story. Whether or not the church gets the cross standing, what's more important, whether they have a cross outside or whether they have the cross inside? And I mean, in the pulpit, in the message that they're preaching. Let's say for the sake of argument, they do. And who would want to fault a church for wanting to put up a cross? The question is, perhaps the fact that it's almost 100 feet tall. Maybe that has something to do with it. I'm sure that's what is going through the minds of the city planners in town and country and those aldermen who will have to decide this issue. This is, by the way, not the first time this church tried to put up a cross. Their first proposal was to put up a 132-foot tall cross, and that was shot down. And then about a year later, they asked for a 110-foot cross, and that was again rejected by the Planning Commission. And so they cut the height to just under 100 feet, and they still couldn't get approval. Is it Christian persecution? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The opponents who were at the meeting on Monday, many of them took pains to say, look, we've got nothing against the cross. But this is town and country, and we don't want a big, tall cross sitting right by the highway for everyone to see as they drive by. And it's nothing about the cross. We don't want a big, tall anything. Well, you know, I was down in the Houston area not too long ago, and as you drive down the highway between, whatever it is, 40, between Dallas and Houston, what to your wondering eyes appear but the tallest statue of Sam Houston you've ever seen? I'm not joking. This thing is so tall you can see it for miles. I would guess 80 feet tall, big white. I thought it was George Washington, and then someone said, no, it's Sam Houston. Just right along the side of the highway, sitting there in the beautiful pine forest of eastern Texas. The tallest Sam Houston you ever saw. And you drive by and you say, well, this state obviously is very proud of its founder. It is kind of comical, too. And you don't want the cross so big. When I've driven past the Effingham Cross, that one is... Where is it? Yeah, that one is almost 200 feet tall. Big cross. Have you seen this thing, Craig? You could not miss it if you ever drove past it. You drive by it and you're like, wow, that's big. That's a big cross. So what do you think, folks? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. There are other structures in town and country that are pretty tall, in fact, taller than this. Roger calls from his car. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Todd. You know, with this 95-foot cross, at least in some sense, you know, it is the cross, although people who see it you know, most would know, hey, Jesus died on the cross, although the significance of that for them may not be evident. I want to contrast that with what I see around town from time to time is these billboards, basically colored green, made to look like a common street sign that have just Jesus written on them, and that's it. And I'm not really sure what the point of that is. I mean, you know, the name of Jesus can be used as a curse word. I'm not really sure what they're trying to get across, but, you know, I at least think the cross is perhaps more significant than something like that. It looks tacky to me.
All right. Roger, thank you very much. So Roger says, look, the cross has at least some more significance than just the big green Jesus signs. It was years ago we talked about the big green Jesus signs. In fact, I was contacted shortly after we did an open lines, five, 6 years ago, on the Jesus signs, by the guy who actually puts them up nationwide. He lives no more than 5 miles from my house. Sweet guy. Sweet guy. And he said, look, this is why I do it. It's just a big reminder to everybody who the main guy is. And it's a big reminder to everybody what the real deal is, Jesus. I mean, that's his reasoning. He means nothing. He doesn't extend it to be deep. And I'll tell you what, that's got to be expensive stuff to do, right? Billboard advertising, some of the most expensive advertising you can do. So, Roger says, at least it's a cross. Have you ever wondered if they could put up a crucifix? You know what I'm talking about. A crucifix is a cross with Jesus on it. And now, there are a lot of churches who still have a crucifix. And then there are the churches that have said, no, we don't like the crucifix. It's a little bloody for us. So let's not have the crucifix. Let's just have the empty cross, which one guest has often pointed out makes about as much sense at Christmas as having an empty manger. Well, Jesus didn't stay on the cross. No, of course, but he didn't stay in the manger either. And then some churches have opted for no crosses at all. When we visited Willow Creek up there near Chicago, not nary a cross to be seen. Had to bring your own, I guess. BYOC church. It's open lines 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's get an update on the latest in this Da Vinci Code trial. It's taking place in London. Here's the latest from CNN.
Witness the biggest cover-up in human history.
The movie is already in the can, slated for release in May. In the meantime, the little matter of just who came up with the big ideas that have made the Da Vinci Code a global bestseller. The book makes the case that Jesus married Mary Magdalene and had a family. The clues, according to the book, to be found in the paintings of Leonardo da Vinci. So author Dan Brown takes a stand at London's High Court this week to defend charges he stole his ideas from a book published 24 years ago called The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail. Brown says it's absurd to suggest that I have organized and presented my novel in accordance with the same general principles as that book. He told the court that much of the research for his work was done by his wife, and that neither he nor his wife consulted the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail until the Da Vinci Code storyline was well developed.
I think the key points will be bringing out at what stage in the process he was aware of the Lee and Bajant book, and trying to make it clear that he was aware of that at a very early stage, and then casting doubt as to whether, in fact, he can really remember exactly what from that he took and what he didn't take from that.
Brown's lawyers questioned the originality of the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, saying the authors are not alone in suggesting Jesus had a family with a bloodline that continues to this day. They argue the ideas cannot be protected by copyright. Certainly plenty is at stake in this case. Not just Brown's reputation, but millions of dollars in future book sales, not to mention revenues from the film.
All right, that's the latest from CNN on the trial there in London surrounding the Da Vinci Code film. Dan Brown is on the scene. It's open lines, issues, etc. here in the first hour, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, about 15 minutes left. And then we're going to be talking about baptism with Pastor Bob Rosso, Assistant Professor of Theology at Concordia University in Irvine, California. Let's talk with Ed now, calling from Chesterfield. Hi, Ed.
Thank you for taking my call, Todd.
Sure.
So, you know, the major oil companies put their signs way up high along the interstates so that people can see their service stations that are out of sight. Now, 40 along there is very hilly. I think the defining limit to how tall a sign should be for some purpose like that, that people would know when to get off the Highway 40 at what exit to take before they could see the church. Other than that, I don't see the practicality of it being any higher than that reason.
Oh, you know, that's kind of a very kind of reasonable approach to this thing. Thank you very much, Ed. So, for instance, I'm sitting here in Clayton, and anyone who's never been to Clayton ever before is always struck when they go the first time driving in on Highway 40 from the east by the Amoco sign. It's the biggest Amoco sign I've ever seen in my life. It's huge. When my parents first saw it, they laughed. It was so big. Now, there's a reason it's that big. They want you to see it from the highway. And it sits just tall enough. It's not real tall. It's just big. If you've never seen it, when you see it, you'll say, wow, that's one big Amoco sign. Why? You would never know there's an Amoco there driving by on the highway if you didn't have the big Amoco sign. And we've all been on the interstate where you got Burger King and their sign is on a pole that's 100 feet tall, if it's an inch. And so people say, let's make the cross in Town and Country, Ed suggests, tall enough. Tall enough to be seen from the highway, but not so tall as to be unnecessarily tall. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Televangelist Pat Robertson is under fire again. Well, he talks about everything, and the last time he was kind of brought up before the press for making statements, his explanation was, look, making statements that people found to be weird, like let's assassinate Hugo Chavez. He said, look, this is all improvised. I just say what's on the top of my head when I'm on the air. Well, he's under fire again for making some disparaging comments, this time about Islam. Let's listen to this report from CNN.
These images, Muslim protesters in Europe, furious over cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, apparently give religious broadcaster Pat Robertson ammunition to take another shot at Islam. On his show, The 700 Club, Robertson makes this comment after a report on the protests.
These people are crazed fanatics, and I want to say it now. I believe it's motivated by demonic power, it is satanic, and it's time we recognize what we're dealing with.
Later, Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network deletes those comments from a version of the show posted on its website. Network representatives say they don't want the remarks viewed out of context. CNN obtained these clips from Media Matters, a web-based nonprofit watchdog group that describes itself as progressive. In a statement, Robertson says his remark about crazed fanatics, quote, refers specifically to the radicals and terrorists who want to bomb innocent people. He does not clarify these comments made seconds later.
And the goal of Islam, ladies and gentlemen, whether you like it or not, is world domination. And by the way, Islam is not a religion of peace.
Unfortunately, Pat Robertson has made these kinds of attacks on Islam repeatedly, and it's of great concern to us.
Ibrahim Hooper from the Council on American-Islamic Relations points to a virtual hit parade from Robertson of anti-Muslim rhetoric. November 2002, Robertson says Muslims are, quote, worse than the Nazis. Earlier that year, Robertson describes the Prophet Muhammad as, quote, an absolute wild-eyed fanatic, a robber and a brigand, a killer.
Is this man who reaches millions on his broadcasts and who once ran for president intolerant and bigoted, as one watchdog group alleges? Pat Robertson wouldn't speak to us. His representatives would not address those allegations. But when asked if he would apologize, they said Robertson's remarks speak for themselves. They do point to other remarks he has made, that many who follow Islam are moderate Muslims who he says are peaceful. Brian Todd, CNN, Washington.
Now, the wrinkle in this one, if you were listening carefully, is that when they rebroadcast that part of the 700 Club for the web, they edited out the comments that he made about Islam. They didn't just edit for length. They edited out those specific comments that Pat Robertson had made about Islam. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, when that happens, maybe, who knows, maybe Robertson says, just edit that stuff out. I shouldn't have said it or whatever, even though he's not saying that to the press. Or maybe they're saying, look, people go to our website. We can't have every time they go to a website, it can't be, let's go to the 700 Club website to see what Pat Robertson said today. You know, there are people who watch the 700 Club to see what Pat will say today. Let's talk with Irwin, who calls from his car. Hi, Irwin.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the cross.
Yeah.
You know, with so much influence in our society today, negative influence on television and everywhere else, we need a 100-foot cross. We need green billboards. Anything that brings Americans back to Jesus is good for society.
Okay, let me ask you a question here, and I don't agree in, I mean, I don't disagree in principle with what you've said here, but how effective do you think the cross really is? Just the 100-foot cross in town and country, how effective do you think it is in bringing people to Jesus?
I think that is going to depend on the state of mind and state of life that the person is in when they see it. You know, it's all an act of grace, and your heart, if your heart is open, then seeing that cross, that may be the key that allows God to dump a bunch of grace on your life.
No, wait, Irwin, thank you for the call. What I'm wondering is this what the previous caller, Ed, said? This is basically advertising for the church, telling you a church is here, analogous to the way churches used to advertise. They built big, tall buildings with steeples on top and crosses on top of the steeple and gold on top so that everyone could see it for miles around. Tallest buildings in town. That's how you knew there's the church. You couldn't miss it. There's the church. There's the steeple. The point was to open the doors and get in there with all the people, right? That was the point. It wasn't just, here I stand on the verdant hills of England looking at this cross on the far-off steeple, and it reminds me of Jesus. I don't think their primary goal was to witness, but to say, here's where Jesus is. Come here, and we'll tell you about him. Now, if that's the purpose, that's different from we're just going to put up a cross and kind of let it speak for itself. Are we at that point culturally where the cross still says what Scripture says the cross says? The image of the cross says the message of the man who died on it. Judy calls from McCook, Nebraska. She listens on her sister station, KNGN. Hi, Judy.
Oh, hi, Todd. I just had a comment about the cross thing again. And it is a Christian symbol, and it means probably only something to a Christian. And we're not saved by just looking at a cross. We have to have the Word. And the cross is not the sharper than the two-edged sword. It's the Word of God that's sharper than the two-edged sword. And I find that churches that promote this public display usually don't even display the same in their members' homes or on their own church buildings or inside their own church buildings or preach Jesus Christ from their pulpits. But they're really good on living principles and teaching principles and doing works. Now, I guess if the cross is being placed on their own property and it's to advertise the church's location so that you can come and receive the gospel there, I'd be for it, I guess.
Thank you very much, Judy. And it's true. I mean, it is ironic that, say, for instance, Willow Creek, I believe there was a cross at Willow Creek, out on the sign, out on the highway. It was a very kind of stylized, swooshy-looking thing, but I think it was a cross. And I think it was even kind of incorporated into the lettering somehow. But you get in there, and there's no cross. And then you listen to what's being preached there, and more often than not, there is no preaching of Christ and Him crucified. That is a great irony. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Can the cross communicate the gospel, the good news of the man who lived and died on it for sinners, Jesus Christ? It can, but not as just simply a magical symbol. You take a pencil and on a piece of paper draw a vertical line and then a horizontal line that crosses it. You've drawn a cross. It could also be a plus sign. It could also be a T. Out of context, it could also just be scribbles. Or it could be the beginning of a kite. Just connect the four points, and there I've got my beautiful kite. Out of context. The whole question is context. That's why the crucifix is a more specific symbol than an empty cross. I mean, it's one of the arguments that I've made when people ask, why do you wear this big crucifix when you go and preach someplace? I'll say, well, it says, it still does, it may not always, but it tells, at least at the very minimum, the event of Christ's death on the cross. Now, for someone who doesn't know who the man is on the cross, it does not communicate that. That's why you wear it when you preach the cross. You just can't stand in the pulpit with the big old crucifix around your neck and say, behold me crucifix. No, you can't do that. I guess you could. It is the difference between making sure people have heard the cross and just assuming people have heard the cross. And there are a lot of big assumptions, even with a big, big cross like 99 feet tall, that people driving by will get it. Unless, of course, the goal is to draw attention to the church where you bring them in and then you give it to them. Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March begins with the cross. It's a children's book. It's beautifully illustrated. It's a picture book. The text of this children's book is nothing other than the narrative of the gospel accounts of Jesus' death and resurrection themselves. That's all it is. No embellishment, no added words. It's called He Is Risen Indeed. It's $12.99 plus shipping and handling. Make a great Easter gift for your child, your grandchild, your godchild. Call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours in the next hour. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040 is their toll-free number. Or go to our website and browse before you buy, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. When we come back from this break, we're going to spend an hour talking about baptism with Pastor Bob Rosso, assistant professor of theology at Concordia University in Irvine, California. A whole hour of baptism straight ahead. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.